Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noon. This is an absolute podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy game week.
Happy game week. Happy Mets are good again, knock on wood.
Shh.
Don't speak.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Well, no, I feel like there's at least it's not like a random streak. Like, Cespedes is back, so there's actually, like, a reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries still, like, are terrifying, but now, Reyes is playing well, and a couple other guys are starting to produce, so we'll see. I mean, they're two games back in the wild card, which seemed kind of ridiculous a couple weeks ago, so I'll feel better about it once we get to, like, September and they keep on doing this, but it's been a nice couple, like, quietly successful weeks for the Mets.
Agreed. Positive things. So positive things for Syracuse as well. We're going to start with some basketball, which is weird for this podcast in general, but especially in the off season for that sport. But Andrew White is coming. I feel like this is the second time we've done this year of this like countdown to a player showing up. And for the second time, they have shown up. And now, Andrew White will join Syracuse. Suddenly the Orange go from maybe like a fringe top 25 team.
Sorry, I have a Colgate preview from Campus Insiders loaded on my computer, and I kind of forgot that entails autoplay video, so.
Thanks, Internet.
Yay, Internet.
Yeah, so on that note, Andrew White's coming. That's awesome. We actually have depth. We go from a fringe top 25 team to probably a top 10 to 15 team. We're suddenly very, very deep, probably about 8 deep or so, and Boeheim might actually use them all, which is nice. But Dan, your initial thoughts about White?
It was almost like relief, just because this had stretched out for so long. Like, I remember when Andrew White first handed out on the transfer market, and I think it was probably May or June, and it was just such a long process because obviously classes are starting, and there was so much about his you know, this, I guess, third really recruitment. And so many teams just coming in and out constantly. Miami, Michigan State, obviously VCU seemed to come in late, and then they were the hometown team, which is always scary, especially because they are a very successful program as well. And then you had like the really awful back and forth between Colgate fans and Syracuse fans, which got kind of ugly at times. So I think it's just nice to have him in the fold. He really raises the expectations bar for this team. I don't think we're being ridiculous by saying that Syracuse should be a top 10 to 15 team this year. Based on this depth, assuming we know how to use it, which is going to be the most interesting thing, I think, because Boeheim is so notorious for using, you know, maybe 8 guys, but usually 7 key guys. And, like, there are not a lot of guys on this team. I mean, Matt Moyer is maybe the only one, and he has an injury he's dealing with now, which, you know, who knows if that necessitates a redshirt or whatever. Or if he just, you know, gets, like, the freshman year Chris Joseph, like, some minutes, you know, lobbed at him when there's a blowout. But, there's a lot of the guys in this team who came to sit. Like, Torian Thompson obviously expects to play. He was a huge recruit. Gillen is going to play. He was a same thing, a grad transfer. White, Tyus Battle is not going to sit. He was a 5-star recruit. He's maybe a one and done. So there's a lot of guys who are going to be fighting for some minutes. I think the last time we had what feels like this much depth was 2012. You could even argue that this team might be a little deeper, if not as good at the top. So I'm really interested to see what Boeheim does and how he balances things out and how he react, because the good teams figure this out, and you know, guys will be fine playing 25 minutes a game if it means, you know, pushing for a title. So it's going to be exciting. I'm very excited for this basketball season. And White is really I thought it was going to be a good team anyway, and White's really a capper because he's a proven Power 5 scorer. He averaged almost 17 points in the Big Ten last year. So he can play, and this group is really impressive.
Yeah, you know, like I said, 17 points on a kind of also-ran Nebraska team that I think we all thought would have been better going into last year. But in any case, yeah, the Big Ten's a tough league. I think him putting up those sorts of numbers, that's better than, for the most part, any player put up for Syracuse last year, Benajay aside. And obviously he's gone. I think for the most part, you know, you look at White as a guy who replaces Malachi Richardson's production, and it seems like White was a lot more consistent than Richardson was. That's not to take anything away from Malachi. I think we all appreciate what he did in his 1 year and wish him well for the Sacramento Kings. But in general, this team goes from a squad that, yeah, like Gillen should be able to put up quality numbers. You thought, okay, Lydon's going to take a bit of a step. Chukwu seems like someone who can crash the boards better than anybody did last year. They look like a team that was better than last year's squad. Now this team looks like one that is not only better than last year's squad, but probably light years better from a game-to-game basis, and one that can suddenly go from, you know, maybe middle of the pack in the ACC to one that probably hangs around that top four-ish range, maybe top five, with Duke obviously as the top team, and one that is just raking in recruits at this point at an alarming rate, and then followed by some combination of North Carolina, Miami, Louisville, I think, and then SU. That seemed like the right top five or so, Dan?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty close to what I think we'll see. Maybe we're being a little biased putting Syracuse in there, but I really don't think it's out of bounds. Like, this team, there are eight legitimate quality players. If not all proven, then, you know, they're either proven players at the college level or were four or five star blue chip recruits. I guess Pascal Chukwu maybe isn't either of those, but he's 7'2", and you have to assume, you know, after a year of playing in the system, there's a decent, you know, Boeheim knows what he has there. So there's not a lot of college basketball teams that have that kind of depth and that kind of upside. I also really like the Malachi comparison for White. I don't think they're like super similar stylistically, but I think their production is. And like you said, I mean, White was a senior last year, so he was very consistent, where Malachi kind of ran hot and cold, but, you know, when he was hot, I think he was as good a scorer as there was in the country. So, you know, I don't think White's going to have a game where, like, you know, he was like what Malachi did to Virginia, but I think more often than not, he's going to get his double-digit points. He's going to be a contributor. He's going to be a reliable option. And there's just so many, there's so many guys in this team. It's not like he's going to be the main focus of the defense at every given moment, like he was at Nebraska. He's going to get his shots, which is very exciting because he's a 40% shooter. So this team, just a lot of options. I think the rotations are going to be fascinating. This is really like a almost ideal group for Boeheim to kind of do what he does with. He can roll out so many different lineups and make so many different mismatches. And you could have a team with three or four deadly shooters on the floor. You could have a team that everyone's over 6'7". You could have a team that's just all about rim running with Chukwu defending the post and have, you know, guys spreading the floor and a super athletic lineup. Like, there's just so many different options. It doesn't worry me. I do wonder if this team will take a couple games to find itself. But when it clicks, and I think it will, I think this is going to be a really, really fun group.
I think that's about as good as I could say it. Dan, looking at the team kind of the same way we did on the site today, and for those listening yesterday, what do you think is this team's starting lineup, knowing full well that Boeheim will still play whoever he's going to play, even if they aren't in that top five?
It's really tough. Like, it's hard to imagine Tyler Lydon not starting, and yet I almost think we might get that. And he has like the Deion Waiters, like, you know, starter off the bench role. I'm gonna say it seems like Frank Howard starts at the point. I guess Battle could start there. I feel really good about White's gonna start for sure. I don't think he would have come otherwise. And then I think you either have Howard, Battle, and White, or you have Battle, White, Lydon, Roberson, and I think Roberson will start because he's a senior, and I think Coleman will start, even if he doesn't play the most minutes. I think Boeheim, we know how he is with his veterans. He gets those guys in to start the game, even if they don't stay there. So I feel pretty good about Roberson. I'm like very sure that Battle, White, Roberson, and Coleman start. The question is, do they go with a more pure point guard with Howard, or do they go, or even Gillen, I guess, or do they go with Lydon and have him in there right away?
Yeah, I think I was talking about a similar kind of lineup rotation with a buddy of mine today. And I think what's fun about this group in particular is that you know, for the first time, you know, in recent SU history, is that Boeheim can actually play some matchups, and it's not just, you know, I mean, at least I hope it's not just like a very steady, you know, written in stone top five, but he can play, you know, if he wants to play small ball, you know, he can really trot out, you know, a Howard, Gillen, White, Roberson, Coleman lineup. Maybe even if he wants sub out Roberson for Elidin there, if you really want to. I think that if he wants to, he can even look at a Howard Gillen, and then followed by a Elidin Roberson, you know, Coleman lineup. I mean, there's just so many different possibilities here. Even if you wanted to go really, really big, screw it. Like you could. I mean, White 6'7". So if you want to throw in, you know, a White, Leiden, Roberson, Coleman, with you know, pick your poison at guard. This team suddenly has a ton of depth, has interchangeable depth, which is really nice, and suddenly has a lot of options and a lot of really fun combinations that have them prepared for kind of any amount of opponents. I feel like, you know, last few years, you had just, again, it was kind of whoever were the best five guys on the floor, you know, maybe plug in a good six man. And for the most part, yeah, you had who you had, and now suddenly we see a Syracuse team that is going to have scary depth, again, interchangeable depth, and a lot of different options that give them a lot of different looks, which is something we, again, have not seen in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, you could even, like, you were going with all those different lineups. You could actually even go with something like Gillen, Battle, White, Thompson, and Leiden, and everyone on the floor can at least kind of shoot the three. And a lot of those, you know, a couple of those guys are really, really good three-point shooters. So it's just like, I don't think that would be, you know, something they do all the time, but that'd be like almost like the college version of the depth lineup that Golden State runs out, where you have Leiden playing the five, which he did. If it wasn't the best, but it was pretty capable in way more minutes than he probably should have had to. Throw that out there for five minutes and have a team try to defend that. Like, there's just so many things. I'm very excited. I think it'll actually make the early season games pretty intriguing, just because you're gonna see a lot of lineups early on, just so they can kind of see what works best and what rotations have chemistry. And there's also a chance they bomb some of these teams off the floor. So I'm pretty pumped, especially after last year, which, you know, ended up being a really fun year out of nowhere, but was really tough at times. This season, it should, I have no doubt that it'll be a really fun ride the whole time. I'm about as excited for a Syracuse basketball season as I have been since probably 2012, 2013. So definitely a good time to be orange, especially considering, like, in the last couple of years, we've worried about all the NCAA stuff and everything else. And now all of a sudden, you know, this team has a Final Four contender once again and coming off a Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to... I'll mention Final Four. I'm definitely superstitious, definitely scared of the possibilities. I mean, this is another one of those teams that, I mean, this was a regular thing for several years in a row, that could maybe start rolling, you know, 10, 11, 12, and 0. And that's against a difficult-ish schedule, at least in name recognition. I mean, you look at, you know, some of the teams on there in the non-conference schedule. I mean, you have Georgetown, you have St. John's, you have Wisconsin. Once again, you know, for the second straight year, kind of some of your headliners. I'm not even looking at the schedule right now, to be perfectly honest, and I'm not going to, because I feel like that's really just asking not only too much of us, but too much of fans that really shouldn't need to dive in this deep this early. But yeah, it's a tougher schedule. I don't think it's maybe as tough as last year's was by any means, but yeah, those are kind of your highlights. Obviously, the ACC schedule is always very, very deep, and it's pretty punishing. And again, not one of these things that that SU will take lightly, but they're a team that could still, even against a tough schedule, and that's where, you know, you'll see how high they start. Maybe, again, it's sitting around the 10 to 15 mark, and then we'll see how far they can run. But yeah, Syracuse is coming in with more promise into this season than they probably have in a few years, because, as you recall, most of these SU teams have kind of come in with lower expectations in recent seasons versus what we saw probably from probably the last Final Four run to maybe the three or four seasons before that. That was when you were suddenly looking at a perennial, you know, top 10 to 15 again. It'll be nice and interesting to come back to that, especially, and this is you know, what Sean kind of brought up, kind of laughing at the NCAA on Monday. You know, what do the penalties really do at the end of the year? At the end of the day, obviously they penalized our ability to get more recruits and help out maybe some of the guys, you know, lower on the ladder in terms of the depth chart. But at the end of the day, what Dan, do you think really happened here? Especially if Syracuse is able to trot out yet another Final Four type squad and really bring it in almost hilariously rich fashion, you know, after the NCAA told them that you shouldn't, you know, potentially be able to bring that sort of talent to the roster year in and year out.
It's interesting. I think the big things that happened were Raheem Christmas didn't get to play in a tournament his senior year. Some walk-ons aren't going to get scholarships that would have. And it forced Syracuse to really bear down on its recruitment efforts. And that meant focus on Torian Thompson, and they ended up getting him after a really prolonged recruitment. And because of the transfers of Ron Patterson and B.J. Johnson, which I don't think were totally necessitated by the scholarship restrictions. I just, you know, think they saw the writing on the walls and whatnot. And good luck to both them this year, at LaSalle and IUPUI. But it, you know, made the it open up the door for these guys to come in, and you have one and done, you know, because they're grad transfers. You have these one and done players that Bam may have even been more open to taking because of the scholarship restrictions, because they're not on the books forever. So I don't know that it totally changed the way that he and the staff recruit, but it might have just shifted things enough to make all of this kind of come into play at once. And obviously it did nothing to scare away recruits from coming to Syracuse.
No, it did not. I think that's the thing that I think a lot of folks on the naysayer side might have been worried about. Truth be told, I feel like I'm much more of a naysayer in terms of football than basketball, and maybe that's because of what I, you know, and you know the shit I had to see and the things that I had to witness on a weekly basis as a student when I was there in football versus basketball, where yeah, the first couple of years were rough. And then things got pretty bright in a hurry, you know, with the six overtime team, and then obviously the Wes Johnson year. I think, sure, I still have my moments with both programs, but I think that I can very, very quickly talk myself into some things with this basketball team and a lot of the past basketball teams, and that's great to see, and it's great to see kind of this early that that we can have some fun and lighthearted conversations about basketball, its promise, and everything it could potentially do this year. And I'm excited for it. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I will say, again, knock furiously on wood, the Final Four this year is in Phoenix. And that's about as far west as they'll go, at least right now. Who the hell knows? Once the Los Angeles Rams get started on their kind of indoor outdoorish stadium, it's supposed to be really nice. It's supposed to be nearby to my location here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and that gets me excited for both nearby National Football League action as well as potentially down the road, maybe even some Final Four. That'd be really nice.
I think we'd all take a back-to-back Final Fours. Why not?
Who wouldn't take a back-to-back Final Four? I'm trying to think of the last team that did it. I know I did not go about that. It's probably some North Carolina team, if I had to guess.
Has Kentucky done it under Calipari? I mean, they've been to a bunch. I guess they would have had to, because I think the Brandon Knight team made it, and then they won the year after, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
We'll look that up.
One day.
I'm pretty sure that's it, though.
You know what? I'm not looking that up. Screw that, Dan. If the answer is North Carolina or Kentucky or some Michigan State team or Louisville, I don't care about any of those programs.
Fair enough.
And you shouldn't either. So, yeah. Why don't we...
Yeah, it is Kentucky, by the way. 2014-15.
Damn it.
And 2011-12. God damn it.
Anyway. Dan, why don't we talk some beer now? That way we can just kind of throw around as much match football as we want as we get to the second half of the podcast that will, again, decidedly be about not only Syracuse football, but Syracuse football versus Colgate, which is awesome because, again... We've got some real game action, which is awesome for me, for you, and for everybody listening that we actually get to talk about some real outcomes, which is a first in quite some time.
Very nice. Let's do it.
All right. So, spill the beans. What were you drinking in Vegas?
So I didn't get a chance to go to a lot of the great beer bars. I will say that. In the Hard Rock where we were staying, there is a Goose Island pub, and there is just Goose Island everywhere. Like, they just kind of own that whole hotel. So I had a lot of Goose Island, as it turns out. They had the 3112, which is one of my favorites. They had their Summertime Kolsch. They had the Green Lime, which I don't think I had before. The regular IPA, obviously, is a nice standard. They had the Bourbon County on bottle, which is great. And only the second or third time I've had that. Didn't have a chance to try all the different large formats because they were like $50 a couple of them, and I wasn't about to spend that for Deuce Island. But overall, that was probably the focus. And then otherwise, just, you know, bad cheap vodka drinks on the casino floor. Yay!
You checked into none of them.
I know. I was really bad about that.
Dan, how are we supposed to direct the readers to your drinking history?
Well, they will have to listen to the podcast and then go look them up themselves.
Fine. All right. I didn't drink a ton last weekend, if only because my roommates from Syracuse are going to be out here for Labor Day, and I decided that that my liver probably needed to breathe.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to have like a that might be me this weekend coming off of the Vegas shenanigans, and then going into my birthday the weekend after. I might just take this weekend off and punt on it.
Let's not pretend that I didn't drink. We all know that.
Fair enough.
Happen. but yeah, what did I drink? In the last week, I took a look at Stone's 20th anniversary Citricado IPA. For those not familiar with the area around Stone, the Citricado Parkway is how you get in over there. That's where the brewery is located. And I'd have to say that while I thought it was a decent beer and a gorgeously smelling beer, I had far too high expectations for it as an IPA. But, you know, good. I always love Stone. I think a lot of people will give a lot of credit for what Stone's done for the beer community and the fact that they are staunchly independent and brazenly dedicated to some hoppy IPAs. They do understand that, while they're not the most boisterously loud flavor wise, they still are as a brewery. I enjoy them. I think it's great to crack open a Stone IPA every so often. And that was one of the beers I had. The brewery's Saison. It was a took a Saison recipe, a Belgian Saison recipe, but subbed in German hops, which has its fun elements there. Grabbed a Frambulus from the brewery as well. Grabbed a bottle of Supplication from Russian River that wasn't as good as some past bottles. And I know I'll rave about Supplication, as will most of the beer community. And I don't know, for some reason it just didn't hit for me. That would have been the end of my drinking, if not for a little Julius from Treehouse. You know, the East Coast beer community always loves their kind of hazy IPAs. They're juicy and hazy IPAs, and I was able to grab one of those and really enjoyed it. So thank you to Nick, a buddy of mine, who sent that out my way. So again, there's your week of drinking. I will have a bunch more to report next week. We go henceforth to some Syracuse football, which Dan, what has us excited this week? Who is our week one opponent? I will let you do the honors.
Our week one opponent is the Colgate Raiders.
Who do?
Yes. Who we will hopefully even or actually take the series lead against, because apparently Colgate just destroyed us in the first half of the 20th century.
Yeah, things are rough. You would have thought we would have evened this thing out by now, but for a very long time, actually, SU didn't bother scheduling FCS teams. The 1978 FCS split with FBS, which is where we are, for those that are willfully ignorant of college football. We didn't bother playing FCS schools for quite a bit. That changed in the last decade or so, and here we are. We're playing the Colgate Raiders for the second or third time since the split. So there was a little bit of an absence, but yeah, you know what? It makes too much sense. It makes too much sense to tack on a hopeful win, and it's nice to play a local school that we have some history with. And I'm always a big fan of scheduling an easier team from those ranks, both to help local schools as well as to hopefully help our own resume, which is always nice. Scheduling wins is always good when you have them in short supply as a program that might have struggled in recent years, and also plays in a not only difficult conference in the Atlantic Coast Conference, but also as a team that plays in a very difficult division in the Atlantic. As we discussed last week, the Atlantic division is filled not only with your typical Florida State and Clemson, but also your Louisville's that aren't really a walk in the park. You've got a Boston College team that, hey, whatever, yeah, maybe you're good sometimes. And then we've got Pitt, who might be good, should be good, based on talent. Just on town alone. And then you've got your Virginia Tech crossover, among some other teams. So, yeah. And then Syracuse obviously doesn't know how to schedule in a way that makes things easy. In this case, while we did kind of sign ourselves up for this Notre Dame game before we came to the ACC, if memory serves. Yeah, we got Notre Dame. So, tough schedule, but in week one, an FCS team that should hopefully, once again, help out the resume. Dan, what do you think we're going to see? I guess first from Syracuse in game one, and then maybe we wade into a little bit of Colgate, because, you know, to be honest, while we're going to be able to speak to them in some sort of educated fashion, I don't necessarily think that many fans going in are going to be able to really say a ton about an FCS team. And I mean, I think that goes for any FBS squad facing an FCS foe in week one.
Yeah, I mean, there's very limited information about a lot of these teams, especially Colgate, who is not like a super known quantity at that level. Obviously, they should be pretty good this year, but they're not like NDSU or anything. On the Syracuse side, I mean, it's the first team of the Dino Babers era, which is very exciting for all of us. I think the thing that we should expect to see is an offense, which is a vast departure from recent Syracuse football history. I don't know that the offense will be super in tune or like at what level they're going to hit, but they should be able to have their way with Colgate's defense, no matter how good it is. It's still an FCS team. It is still one that, you know, Syracuse has not lost an FCS in its history yet. And hopefully that doesn't change this year, although Colgate is pretty capable. I think most of what people are going to focus on is what Syracuse looks like, because while we have an idea, like you can go watch Bowling Green from the last couple of years, you know what the offense looks like. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do with the players that they're inheriting and who fills what roles. And you have all these position changes, and you have Eric Dungy adapting to his new offense when he was very successful in last year's, despite last year's being very limited in a lot of ways. So I think most of the focus for Syracuse fans will understandably be on Syracuse and not necessarily the matchup itself. Because, you know, there are some nice players at Colgate, which we'll go over. They're expected to be a top 25 preseason team at the FCS level. They have a trouble all-Patriot League type players. But the story here is Dino Babers' first game, as it should be.
Indeed. You know, and obviously we went over the full roster preview last week, which was awesome. Always nice to go down the entire depth chart, chat about maybe some of the lesser known quantities. And again, you know, it's kind of the only time that we really get to dive into the roster as much as we'd like to. But for this game, we get to preview some of these guys. And you know what? The depth chart showed up on Monday, which was awesome. It was nice to see that, because it allows us to, for the first time, I think, at least for Dino Babers, maybe see kind of what he sees in these players. You know, we saw a little bit of that in spring ball, but, you know, after seeing them in spring and now seeing them for a full bit of a summer camp, we saw a two deep from Dino Babers that brings some things that were known. Obviously, you know, your Eric Dungy's, your Steve Ishmael's, and some of the other guys, to maybe some of the more surprising things that went down, and that is, you know, your Chris Slayton's at defensive end, your freshman Kendall Coleman at defensive end, and then I don't know, Dan, what else surprised you? I'm just kind of glancing around the depth chart. What else surprised you in terms of what and where Dino Babers kind of sorted around these guys?
I think for me, the biggest surprises were how the tackle position shook out. I know we went over the offensive line last week, and you know, it's kind of it's probably the biggest unknown on the at least in terms of personnel on the offensive side. And you have Cody Conway winning the job as a sophomore left tackle, which I think is a good sign. It would have been very easy to rely on a more veteran player, but I think it should probably be taken as, you know, Conway beat out someone for the job, and that's a good thing, because if he holds it down, I mean, that's a three-year starter, so that'd be great. And then you have Jamar McLaster beating out Michael Laster at right tackle. I know we talked about Laster last week at fair length. You know, he had some decent moments last year, but, you know, he also had some times where he, you know, definitely got beat pretty bad. McLaster, 6'7", 328, has the physical tools. And if he is a quality right tackle, this line starts to look a lot better. Because, you know, we talked about Amari Palmer and Jason Emmerich kind of being the two rock-solid redshirt seniors. Not worried about them. Aaron Roberts coming in as a third-year player, redshirt sophomore at left guard. Not as worried about him. But having Conway in there does make me feel a little better, just because I think the coaches putting him in at left tackle kind of shows that they have some belief in his abilities. And then McLaster obviously sliding in with a bit of an upset over Laster, although I think that was probably a pretty close race throughout. And then you also have Cam McPherson winning the starting tight end job, which is kind of an interesting storyline. Obviously, I don't know how much tight end we end up seeing in this offense, but if he's out there, you know, he'll be the guy, and we'll keep the McPherson family legacy rolling here.
Yeah, I mean, we saw McPherson up at the top, I believe in spring ball too.
He was starting throughout.
Yeah, he was, and you know, I think we might see him up at the top for a lot of time. But one guy that that I would assume, based on the switch over, switch back from the defensive end spot, Dunkelberger. I feel like Dunk ends up finding his way into a few more snaps. I know we don't really know what we're getting in him from a tight end perspective, but I think Dunkelberger is supposed to be maybe your most athletic tight end, but most athletic tight end doesn't necessarily always fit with Dino Babers' offense, and that's where Kendall Moore, who, you know, knock on wood, hopefully is healthy. It seems like he's been a little more healthy, at least from what we've seen in summer. It seems like Kendall Moore would be maybe a little bit of a better fit from a blocking standpoint. As we know, he's played at both offensive line and tight end throughout his time in his career at Syracuse. And I would expect Kendall Moore to mix it up a little bit more, no pun intended, since he can and will be a blocker. But the one player, if you jump up one spot on the depth chart, that I think, you know, Dan, I know we were talking about a little bit last week, you know, a guy that, hey, based on summer, could potentially start. Or at least see it a lot of snaps, and lo and behold, there he is, Amba Etatawo. And now we even have an extensive pronunciation guide for him. But Amba seems like a guy who will be able to work the sideline in a similar fashion to Steve Ishmael. It seems like he has a lot of speed. Seems like his experience, even in a different offense and on a different team, still will help him out. Dan, would you think that he's a surprise necessarily, or is he more of just a guy that we kind of expected to come on, and you know, lo and behold, there he is?
I'm not, just because we've gotten pretty good reviews on him throughout camp. But I mean, it was hard to really gauge what he was going to be when we got him from Maryland, because you know, he had really good explosion numbers. He had high yards per catch, But their quarterback situation has been pretty rough throughout his tenure there. So there's a decent chance he's kind of a diamond in the rough. I think that this, you know, the receiving group looked pretty decent without him, and now with him, if he truly is a good number two option across from Steve Ishmael, obviously with guys like Phillip and Esteem sharing the same spot in the depth chart in the slot, it definitely adds a nice dimension to the offense, especially because a guy like Alvin Cornelius, who I know we were high on for a while and just, you know, hasn't quite panned out to the consistent player that we probably thought he would be after the end of the 2013 season. It's good to have another legitimate option that we can go to. And everything we've read and heard from his time on campus has been pretty good. So I'm like we said last week, I'm pretty excited for this receiving corps, considering, you know, you have those four guys who all seem like, we know Ishmael is could be a top line receiver. We know what Brizzly can do. We know what Irv can do as a football player. I don't know about receiver, but I trust that they're getting the most out of him there. Add Edetowo into that group, and you have some depth, which is cool.
Yeah, and again, you know, we see a little bit of that depth mixing it up again. You know, I think Baber said that that for the most part, it's not as if Esteem's been demoted. It was just that they had a limited amount of lines they could use, and there they are. Moving over to the defensive side, excuse me, Slayton was a little bit of a surprise for some, but I think a lot of that just goes into, you know, sometimes we'll see a bigger lineup. I think some of Pickard's move down, as some might have said, might have been a little bit of an ankle tweak. That just has him shifting down to the second slot. And again, if there's one week out of any that you'll see a guy with maybe a slight injury or even just a favoring, maybe either take a seat or just maybe play a few limited snaps. It's going to be that week one matchup with an FCS team. Yeah, shoot, Dan. If there's anything else you had to add on at least the defensive line front, which had some, I think, actually, yeah. Maybe the most surprises out of all of them, but none that are really earth-shattering just the same.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting and notable that, like, if you had asked us probably the day before this came out who the two starting defensive ends would be, we probably would have said Jake Picard and probably Dijon Wilson, and there they are at the two second lines. And obviously, like you said, Picard might be more of an injury thing than anything else, but I guess, you know, you can read it as a good sign that someone like Coleman came on as a freshman, and Chris Slayton was at least enough to challenge there, and even if the ankle injury necessitated it, you know, they feel comfortable sliding in there at the number one spot, against Colgate or not. So, yeah, I mean, defensive end is definitely where we still have the most depth issues, but it's, you know, even if you don't want to say it's a good sign, that's fair. I think it's notable that those are where the two biggest surprises in terms of number one spots are, because we you know, thought we had maybe three or four guys that could play their total, and we have two guys on the second line who we both expect to be contributors. So that's interesting. I'm not going to, like, reach and say it's good, because that might be kind of spinning it too positively, but there's a chance it is.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I guess looking around a little bit more, and I think then we can shift our focus over to Colgate, who I haven't found a depth chart necessarily. Maybe you have, but there's a roster of some pretty talented guys. I mean, again, an FCS top 25 squad. But I think if there's the one other thing that we might want to go with a little bit is the defensive end position. And you see a Kendall Coleman, who Dino Baber seemed to talk quite a bit about and seems to be very fond of, at least from his work ethic. and what he was able to do in a very limited amount of time on campus so far. I think Coleman starting is surprising, but I think we were going to see a ton of him anyway, at least from what we all would have guessed. So yeah, I think we might be able to wrap up the we'll wrap up the SU depth chart there. If there's one player that on the Colgate side that if SU fans don't know already, they will soon. Jake Melville, potential standout, and probably the best player on the Colgate roster. Dan, is there anything that you think, looking at the Colgate roster from a sense of first, maybe what they might be able to do to damage SU and its weaknesses, is there something off the top of your head that even a team like Colgate, again, FCS, so not going to be an FBS talent level squad, are there a couple things that you see them being able to do just off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever you have probably the opponent's best player being their quarterback, and a guy who can hurt you with their arm and their legs, it is a bit scary. I think the worst case scenario is Melville kind of going off and having a game similar to the one that Villanova's quarterback had a couple years ago, where he absolutely gashed SU. I don't remember his name, unfortunately for him. But Melville, he ran for, looks like over 1,000 yards last year. He threw for over 2,500. Probably even more dangerous as a runner than a passer. He was only a 55% completion guy. But he is definitely a guy who looks like he can gash a defense. And then you have a guy like James Holland, the running back, who had 730 yards, 16 touchdowns. It's definitely not the best thing when you can point to a quarterback running back combo out of your FCS opponent and say those are like the two best guys. But that's what we're dealing with. Hopefully things do go better than they did in that Villanova team, though, which was obviously way too close for comfort. But like you said, there's going to be a big talent gap. Even with the down years, Syracuse recruited, about as well as it has been over the last decade under Scott Schaefer. So there are, plenty of legitimate Power 5 players on this roster. Colgate does not have very many of those. The steam is going to be the big question. How quickly does Syracuse put out a decent product in the Dino Babers mold? Does it, we don't expect it to be a, perfectly polished product in week one, but is it good enough to beat a good football team, even one that is playing with the talent gap that we've referenced? I tend to think so, but anything can happen, and hopefully whatever happens does not get too overblown, whether it's like a 40-point win or a 3-point win or, God forbid, a loss.
Yeah, and I think the thing that a lot of people have to keep in mind, I know we talked about a little bit last week, is, no overreactions, please. I'm on week one. Unless there's a loss in that case, sure, whatever, panic. I know we might just a little bit, especially with it's an FCS squad. I think, where we might see some little surprising wrinkles is the fact that, Babers, this offense, not going to look 100%, and that's not because of an injuries thing. That's by and large because of a team and a system that, not fully baked. I'd say about 75% there right now, maybe 85%. From a playbook standpoint, I know obviously they understand the playbook, they've run the playbook, but a lot of it is just going to be because, Babers doesn't want to give up all the secrets. That's, I think, in part because of why we didn't see a ton of of the team and what the scheme is going to be. You know, you just weren't going to see a lot of that revealed throughout the summer. But with Louisville coming into town the following week, you just, yeah, if you're gonna be able to spring a surprise on a Bobby Petrino squad and on the Louisville team that is going to be in the top 25, you're not going to be able to do it if you're going to reveal a lot of that offense in week one. I don't even know if he'll reveal the entire offense in week two. I really think it just depends on how quickly things start to look up against Louisville. And again, we're not going to start previewing that game just yet. But I think we'll see a team that should still be able to win by four touchdowns. I think we can get a little bit into Predictionville without getting into specifics. You know, who knows how long the starters are in? Who knows how well they start? But Dan, what do you think? You thinking four touchdowns as an estimate? And that's not to hate on Babers. It's not to put cast out. But it's to say that maybe, perhaps, the team kind of puts its foot halfway on the gas throughout the game just to get the job done and then get ready for a much, 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 much more difficult opponent in week two.
I'm actually going to even be a little less, I wouldn't say less optimistic. I'm going to be a little less sure on Syracuse winning that easily. I think Colgate's pretty good.
Less optimistic than John.
I know.
That's not a thing.
Disloyal and whatnot. I'm going to take Syracuse by 17. I think it'll be fairly close into the third quarter. I don't think Colgate will ever like super challenge, but I think it'll be one that we probably have to at least keep our attention on until maybe the mid-third quarter, and then maybe Syracuse pulls away. I just think Colgate, you know, they have a lot of guys back, they're experienced, they're obviously a good team, they're ranked. Syracuse with the new system, Kingston will be worked out. Baber is constant since like day one, basically telling us, you know, to keep patient and let this thing build. So I'm not going to pick them to totally blow out a top 25 FCS team in game one. Hopefully, when we play our FCS team in year two, then, you know, we throw up 65 on the board and, you know, everyone goes crazy. This year, I think it's going to be a little more tempered.
Hey, Brent, this is Craig from Liverpool, and I gotta say, didn't really love it until week one. Left around halftime, had to pack the car to head up to the Thousand Islands, and did not love what I saw. You know, I really think we should have stayed with Schaefer.
Were there leaves to be raked, though? That's the major question.
No leaves yet. It's way too hot.
It's a way too hot 78 degrees here in upstate New York.
Far too balmy. Me and a family had to head out immediately. And I did not love what I saw from this team. I stand casually near Shaker.
Oh, God. Are we going to do this every podcast now?
that really depends on what happens in week one.
Fair enough.
Yeah, maybe we'll even bring Brent on eventually and see if he can give us a collection of his favorite callers.
I actually thought you actually sounded kind of like Brent doing a caller, so that was pretty good.
I feel like my radio delivery is similar-ish, at least from a voice standpoint, to Brent to begin with.
So, he's really just your inspiration.
There you go. Brent Dax is an absolute podcast. We love you, Brent. We really do. That was a complete knock on your on the eventual callers who will want Dino Babers fired for one reason or another.
When we lose, assuming we lose to Louisville, and it could be really bad. I don't think it's going to be super bad, but you know there's obviously the potential there because Louisville's quite good. I expect the takes to just be so good,
blazing hot.
How dare this team and their second game under a new coach with a completely different system lose to a top 25 team by any margin?
Roll damn Babers. All right. So now that we both think that SU is going to win, Dan, is there anything else that you would want to touch on here before we roll into what should be a very fun Friday night?
The only thing I want to add is that looking at the depth chart before, our backup punter's name is Nolan Cooney. So yes,
Cooney,
there is
legacy.
Another Cooney. There is another Cooney at Syracuse. He's a freshman. And
a
I hope that
very inspiring story, actually.
Yes, and I hope, and should he ever play, and I hope it doesn't mean that Sterling Hoffrichter is not up to the billing or injured, but should Nolan Cooney ever play, I legitimately hope that they botch his name, just because it would be in keeping with history and tradition.
Yeah, if he ever plays, I'm writing another Cooney legacy post, despite the fact you all told me not to.
Nolan Cooney had a coffin corner punt today. What does this do to Trevor Cooney's legacy at Syracuse?
Does this mean that he actually hit the layup against Michigan?
I mean, we have to start Nolan Cooney against Notre Dame, right?
Oh, without a doubt. The Irish killer.
He's going to just kill so many punts inside the five.
Oh, God. All right. Oh, actually, speaking of punters, while we're still here, Riley Dixon.
Right.
Officially the Denver Broncos punter and soon to be quarterback.
Amazing. So good. I'm so happy for him. And I'm so happy that we can continue to spread the good word of Riley Dixon into Sundays. How amazing. This is so cool. Like, that's such an underratedly cool thing that happened today.
He's easily going to be he's going to be among the most notable SU grads in the NFL this year. Probably top three.
Yeah, I mean, it's Freeney's on a team. Pugh is obviously a starter still, and
now.
Defender of America.
For now.
And, well, for now, yeah.
The
and,
Giants' offensive line's not looking great. Gotta stay.
And, Riley Dixon, booming punts for a team that is probably going to punt a lot because their defense is quite good and their quarterback is Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian, who you might remember from a 2012 game against Syracuse.
And a weird Heisman campaign.
Yeah, and again, the fact that this does open the door for Riley Dixon will throw a pass this year, mark my words.
Oh, and also another special teams note, since you brought up Riley Dixon throwing a pass, our holder is Zach Mahoney.
Woo!
So trip play potential is out there.
Fake
Philly. For sure.
We're doing this.
So excited.
As am I. All right. This was a very late podcast for Dan, a sort of late podcast for me. But yeah, Dan, thank you for auctioning off your sanity for us for an hour.
I'm going to go to sleep and probably don't be late to work tomorrow because I am running on about 17 hours of sleep over the last 5 days.
Yeah.
Thanks, Las Vegas.
Yeah. All right. On that note, that was Dan. I'm John. Thanks for tuning in to Troy Noon's Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, or wherever else you may listen to us. And for the first time this season, in earnest, go Orange.
Go Orange.